Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Simon Phipps joins me. We're going to talk about the Libre API, a way to liberate your data. Built for the government, but good for everybody. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Simon Phipps. Episode 280, recorded January 22nd, 2014. Libre API. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free Libre open source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at StoneEngine.com, bringing you as often as I can the movers, the shakers, the big projects, the small projects, the projects you're probably using every day, the projects you might not have heard of, the projects that are just getting off the ground floor, wanting more attention, like this week's project, but we'll talk about that in a second. I'm joined today again by my one of my favorite co-hosts, because they're all my favorite co-hosts, Simon Phipps. Welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you very much, Randall. It's good to be back at last.
And actually, I think this is the first show we've done in, what, like 6 months together?
Oh, you every time I've done the show, you've been on a cruise somewhere, you know?
Oh, yeah. I had back-to-back cruises for the last 4 months, so it was really complex.
It's a but someone has to do it, you know?
Yeah, you've done the show, what, like four or five times since I've been on with you, right?
I think at least that, yeah. And so you started getting complaints, and they probably started saying you needed to be here to give me adult supervision.
No, I just really enjoy doing the show, and I'm doing it every chance I get, but sometimes I am on a cruise ship or some other place that does not have good net connection, so I cannot do that show. So where are we speaking to you from? Where are you speaking to us from?
I am in my home office in Southampton in the UK, where the dusk is just setting in outside the windows, and where my cat is sleeping quietly on the floor under the desk and not begging for food at the moment.
Very cool. And I am in Southern California, as usual, actually Santa Monica now, my new client here. We're getting ready to do some cool releases of some of their software. ZipRecruiter, I should probably mention them once, but they're actually giving me all this great bandwidth. They have Fios, so I was just testing it before the beginning of the show, and it's like 160 down and 70 up, and I'm sure I'm not actually doing an actual calculation because I'm probably testing the other end. So anyway, so it's great. I've got my Yeti Pro here. I'm having a good time. And let's talk about the project today. The project today is Libre API. We have a guest on who's actually been a guest fairly recently on our May 2013 show, Roberto Rosario. And he had a role in the government then talking about opening up stuff using his project that he's been shepherding, Mayan EDMS. EDMS, I can't even say all those letters. But now he's back to talk about opening up data in all sorts of ways with Libre API. I sort of read through the website a little bit, didn't understand it quite well, but that's why we have a guest on to talk about it. Simon, you have a chance to look at this at all?
Yeah, I've been looking at it. It looks like the sort of tool that anyone who's ever worked in a corporate environment that's going through transition has had to write for themselves, moving data from point A to point B. It looks like it could be a very significant open data tool as well. So I'm going to be interested to see what Roberto's got to say about the open data uses of it.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, without further ado, let's go ahead and bring on Roberto. Roberto, welcome back to the show.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
And where are you speaking to us from? I bet it's somewhere in Puerto Rico, right?
Yes, this time I'm in Rincon, Puerto Rico.
Where is that about? I've been to the island a few times. Where's that at?
It's in the West Coast.
On the West Coast. You know, I've never actually gotten that. I've never actually gotten that far because we've been to like San Juan and a few places around that, but I've never been all the way over. So, let's talk a little about Libre API. Why don't you give us a 30,000-foot view and what problem it's actually solving?
Well, Libre is a little bit hard to explain and compare to because there's very little software like it. The closest you can explain it is, as Sam said, it's a typical software you would have to write when you want to move from one data set type from another. And I noticed that's a very common task. So I set out to create a software that would generalize that function as much as possible. So Libre basically is a data converter. But further from being a data converter, it also creates a data set showcase and library and an API engine for you to query those data sets. without having to create custom software for those data every time you want to export one set of data.
Well, it sounds like a problem has been solved over and over again, though. I mean, what's the distinction for Libre, and why are you setting out to do this?
Well, because as of now, there's only three software I know of that does the same thing. It's Socrata. It's a free and commercial software, CCAN and DCAN. They set out about to do the same thing, but they mostly stop at the upload phase of data, and they create limited endpoints, API endpoints for that data. Socrata goes a little bit further, and it has a small query language, but it was very limited. I met with the Socrata people, it's Steve Ellsworth, and we were discussing the feature set of Socrata early on Libre development, and to see if it was more efficient to use a pre-made commercial solution for our problem in the government. But after meeting him, it was very clear that the Libre already had much more requirements. For example, we needed a unified query language so that our users, which is the community, the people, would be able to use all the diverse data that the government has. So I need one single query engine. None of the products on the market do that. For example, take SQL and web services. You have a wide range of SQL dialects, and you have a wide range of web services. Mm-hmm. And we needed one single way of querying data. So it doesn't matter if the data was original in a spreadsheet, or it came from a CSV file, or if it even came from geospatial data. We needed one single query language to be able to query all that data in just one language. And that was one of the prime requirements of the project, and none of the commercial or existing solution had that.
So how did this get started? What was the sort of original problem that you were working on? You said, well, we need to do something that really unifies this API.
Well, one of the major goals of the CIO of Puerto Rico, he wanted his legacy to be the freeing of government data. And he managed to get the governor to sign an executive order 2013-13, I think it is, that he actually, for the first time, had technical language in it, forcing government agencies to at least show up a plan of how they were going to liberate government data. As usual, none of the technical considerations were taken beforehand. So we have an executive order enforcing government agencies to free up their data, and nobody has gave up any technical idea or tools or guidance on how they were going to do that. So the end result was that most of the government agencies that were implementing this executive order by themselves were actually spending more money doing contracts to create APIs. But the APIs were not compatible with one another. So a developer would have to learn the API of one government agency and then learn another API of another government agency, completely different APIs. And when I saw this, they said the solution has to come from inside the government too. We cannot rely on completely different and heterogeneous solutions, because the problem is going to get worse. We have more expenditure of money, and we have completely incompatible now APIs. And another goal of this executive order was to get government agencies to start talking to each other. For example, the governor of Puerto Rico wants to forbid government agencies to ask people for information that the government can acquire by itself. For example, if you're going to go to a job interview, you have to get before the interview several certifications that you don't have committed any crime in the past years. You have to get an IRS certification that you don't owe the government any money. So the person actually has to go to all these steps and get all these paper certifications that, aside from being an extremely tedious task, has the potential for falsification of documents. So instead of having people go out and get papers that can be created very easily, the governor had the idea to also use this motivation to actually start getting government agencies more unified. And for example, if you're going to get work, you just tell the interviewer your social security number, and they get all your background information right there. So it's the main goal was also to improve the quality of service that we render to our ultimate user, which is the public in general.
Well, first off, I found it quite amusing that the government sets standards without consulting any technical people. It's not surprising in the way government does things, and that would create essentially a Tower of Babel. I mean, if everybody's implementing it different ways, then it's going to be a problem. The one thing that concerned me, though, is you said, okay, so rather than me bringing my authentication documents to whoever needs to have them, I just let them access some government records or somewhere. That just to me smells like a big problem in security. How do you manage the authentication and authorization for something like that?
Well, Libre is an complete spectrum solution. It also has access control system. It has throttling. It has a lot of features that, for example, I can create two APIs from the same data. One is a publicly accessible API that has certain information censored, and I can have an internal gateway just for government agencies or government employees to access or query the same data. Another thing that we had to create, aside from the technical, from the actual coding, was policies. We had to create a data classification policy. We actually, Department of Homeland Security helped us a lot with that. And we actually had to there was a lot of prep work that had to be done before the software could actually be implemented. But we also did that. If you go to the cio.pr.gov website, you can see a lot of the documentation that was created before the actual coding began.
And what about things like, you know, everybody goes, well, XML is a nice, you know, way to manage a payload from one machine to another, and it's self-describing and it's universal. But then you get people where we have like a field that's date/date, but the date formats are all incompatible. How do you manage also to have that kind of compatibility amongst the data itself, not just the tags that identify the data?
Well, Libre has a set of import drivers, but it also has a set of output of a rendering driver. So the same data can be rendered in different ways until a true unified way is found. Right now we're looking at NIEM, which is the National Information Exchange Markup Language. It's used in federal agencies. It's an XML format. But before we can get there, Libre exports data in JSON, in YAML, in XML, and on top of that, we can create then a second exporter, for example, for NIEM. One of the problems XML has is that it is very hard to parse when you come from JavaScript. So we didn't want to exclude any. So even though it's a little bit more, right? One of the formats we want to support. It doesn't describe stuff like date, for example. There's no actual official representation for dates in JSON. But instead of tackling that problem, we wanted to at least get the first stage of the problem solved, which was at least getting the data out. Now it's up to the CIO to actually start setting the ground rules for what the data types of each entity is going to be like, which is a problem that NIEM actually solves very nicely.
Right. So I'm looking at the tool that you've got here. It's a web-based tool. But behind it, it's all open source software, I understand. Can you tell me a little bit about why it was made open source software?
Well, there's a very simple correlation between openness and open source and free software. It's just a logical solution. For example, not only I need to get the data out, people need to know how the data is being processed. And the only way you can do that is by free software. Government is a natural playground for free software and open source because the software, in addition to the data, needs to be accountable too. I need to be able to check the data. I need to be able to know how data is being stored, citizen data, for example. I need to know how social securities are being encoded in the software. A lot of software supports database encryption, but sometimes even the keys to the data is stored clear text in another field. So I need to audit the software. So it was a very logical conclusion to me that not only Libre, this project has to be free software and open source. Basically, every software that the government uses has to be free software. I need to be able to audit it. It's not so much about the cost of the software. It's about being able to introspect. I need to be able to see if there are backdoors. I need to be able to check if the random number generator the software is using is up to par with the sensitivity of the data I'm trying to transmit. Private software doesn't allow me to do that, not even with an NDA. And signing an NDA to see the source code of our commercial software is basically shooting myself in the foot, because if the government now wants to do something similar to that, now the NDA is going to be a ban hammer for me, and I'm not going to be able to do that then. So signing NDAs to audit commercial software is also out the window.
So amen to all that about the software being open source for auditability. So how many other instances are there of your Libre software? Is everybody using the government of Puerto Rico's portal, or are there lots of independent installations of this as well?
As of now, there's just one production installation of Libre. It's actually in the Office of Management and Budget. It has about 25 to 30 data sets already exported. But the banking sector has expressed a lot of interest, so we're looking to have commercial installations also of Libre too. The banking sector, for example, has a lot of COBOL and file formats in all formats, and are looking to export them. Of like to develop. Tenet is another prospective user of Libre. They want to free up and liberate the legislation, legislative and senatorial proceedings and the votes on different projects, for example.
Right. Now, that's very interesting because, I've seen a number of projects that are using free software to try and track legislation. In fact, there's code on Git that puts licenses up there. I see that you're using Git at the moment. You've got about 11 forks at the moment. Do you get very many contributions that have come in outside your department, or is it really all your former department's work at the moment?
At the moment, has been basically all work of myself. I had like three patches. I'm trying to contact the community to see what's the biggest hurdle on then contributing code. Because I would like this project to really flourish, and with me now outside of the government, I'm very fearful that it might just die. So my main concern now, as a private contractor, as a person, as a citizen, is to have this code have people own the code, have people protect it and extend it and force the government to use it. Now, there's a very big resistance in the government to liberate data, and I don't want to get a conspiracy theory kind of thing, but there's an established economy, and liberating government data would actually change that paradigm, and a lot of people are fearful of change. So my main concern now is for people to continue developing the software, expanding it, improving it, and basically telling the government, you have this software here now, what's the excuse? Please use it. Give me access to the data that's already public, but I want access in electronic form.
I remember decades ago, back when mag tape was sort of the universal format for large storage, the good old 9-track tapes. I played with those many, many times earlier in my career. The state of Oregon had made it possible for anyone to go in and pay, I think it was like a $5 request to the Department of Motor Vehicles, and take a license plate number and turn it into the owner's name and address. But somebody figured out that you could buy the tape of all the names for something like $100. And so they put that on a very early website. And I looked at my own address, and sure enough, it was there. And of course, everybody screamed, "Oh, privacy violations! Oh, this is horrible!" So I'm very familiar with this. It's like, you know, the DMV was slowly making $5 at a crack, and to put the data all public in a sort of easily accessible format would be counterproductive for them. So I could see the resistance from that experience for myself. So getting back to the software for a moment, how is it organized? What parts do we have? I presume there's like a web API of some kind and maybe some ways to upload and download stuff and maybe a database inside. Tell me more about the structure of the software.
Well, one of the things, Libre has to fulfill all the pipeline needs. So it has import drivers for several data sets. More can be created. It can import data from spreadsheets, come with a limited file, fixed width columns, files, flat files, and shape files from GIS software. It also has versioning. It can keep the several versions of an import just in case the originating source goes offline, which is another big problem in the government. The infrastructure, the data infrastructure in the government, if you dig deep down enough, you're going to find chewing gum holding wires. So it is as bad also. So I need to be able, the software also needed to be able to keep serving data, even if the originating source went offline. The software also has access control. So for that, I'm using a Django REST API framework, which solves all those problems out of the box. It has throttling support. It has access control. It has a browsable API so that the developers can play with the data. On top of that, it has a front end for end user, for non-technical users. It kind of creates a web page with a very limited CMS capability so that the average user can go in and look at to see what data the government is liberating, click and preview the data in a great format. So it also creates a very simple portal. And on top of that, the export drivers can export the data in different formats, and you have the Libre API engine with the unified language. Beneath that, because I needed a lot of features that are non-existent in one single database manager, I had to create a middleware. So Libre also has its own data storage. It's not the typical data storage that you will find in your run-of-the-mill database manager. It's more akin to a object database. So, for example, I can store data. Libre will actually evaluate the data on runtime, and I can query the database for fields that were not present when the data was imported. So, for example, I can upload polygons for the delimitation of counties, and then I can query the engine to give me the polygons that have X amount of area or larger. That's a value that's not imported. You only import the data points, but the engine can actually evaluate the data, and you can query it for properties that are only available runtime. So it's inherently a little bit slower than your typical database. So it's not meant for millions of rows of the data set types. It's meant for thousands of rows. For millions of rows, you're just better off converting the entire data set into SQL and just uploading it as it is.
You know, it's curiouser then. So you're talking about a data set that's separate from the original source of truth. For example, I mentioned earlier the DMV records for the Oregon State. If you have two distinct data sets, it sounds like it could quickly get out of sync. What kind of processes do you have in place for syncing?
What do you mean, two different data sets?
Well, I mean, if there's the data set that would be in Libre that would talk about my car's license and my home address, that's obviously not going to be what the DMV is updating when they're when I submit my change of address form. They're going to update the real database that they already have, the existing probably legacy database. How do you get that changed information then up through the Libre system?
Libre has a scheduling engine where you can tell it how often you think the data is going to change. And Libre goes either by FTP or by VPN or by any kind of infrastructure communication service you have set up. And it will actually query the original source, and it will check if the data has changed. If the data has changed, it will import again and create a new version for it to serve to the people. So it does periodical checks on the original data.
Well, now that still sounds problematic. You know, if I've got the entire Oregon State DMV records online, and I also have a Libre system that wants to keep querying that, the only way I can know what's changed is to pull everything out and compare it to its own internal database. It sounds like you're doing effectively an import of the entire data, maybe once a day or once an hour, and at some point it's going to be out of sync.
Yes, exactly. But the good thing is that government data doesn't change that often. We have data sets. No, it's actually that was actually one of the few compromises I had to do. One way that can be expanded is that at native replication support for the data sets that come from databases. But that's going to be a big hurdle too, because every vendor implements replication completely different. But one of the only ways I can actually compare data is by pulling all the data from the source, doing a check digit, and if the check digit changes, the data is already on the server that's serving the data on Libre, and Libre can re-import it. It's a little bit wasteful, but it's done once a day, once a week. So it's no different than sometimes the replication the database uses in the government, that they push the entire database. There's no differential. There's differential replication of databases is very uncommon in the government.
Yeah, yeah. There's also, I don't know how you've solved the problem for this too, that an import problem that exists if you're importing only partial subsets of the data is like the problem of identity. Like, if I'm importing a spreadsheet that has Randall Schwartz listed there, and then I import that same database tomorrow, but some of the fields are changed. How do we know it's the same Randall Schwartz? Well, my name is pretty unique spelling, but John Smith is going to be trouble. Do you have the concept of identity in the data that's in Libre, and some way to map that maybe to an external ID that you're actually getting the data from?
No, Libre is actually the first step to solving that problem, because we had to first get the data out. Identity management is now another set of problem that the CIO is trying to solve. Also, single sign-on for government employees is another problem, because you first have to have an identity management infrastructure. But Libre sets the groundwork to start working with that. Now they can do a mapper that maps my identity in one data set to another data set. But that's another set of policy that have to be created. It's not within the scope of what Libre tries to do, which is just get the data out. It's just a data converter from obsolete and old formats into new formats, so that they can be a little bit more compatible with each other. Libre also has, it can also join two different data sets. So for example, you can create a query that queries databases, that queries also that uses a subquery from a spatial file that actually queries a spreadsheet file. So in that sense, that's one of the most important features of Libre towards a unified identity management system.
It sounds like the problems you're solving are primarily not technical, but rather just political, in the sense that you have to deal with privacy issues, you have to deal with authorization on authentication issues, you have to deal with this constant, data changes. How do I keep track of that and keep up to date with that? Are you finding yourself spending more of your time dealing with the interpretation and design than you are with the actual coding, or is the coding still a pretty heavy challenge anyway?
No, the coding is very challenging. There's a lot of features I want to keep adding to, for Libre. Once the initial policies of how things were going to be handled were written, most government agencies were very willing to cooperate. You have to see that this is the first time this is being tried in a unified manner. So most government agencies were actually very willing to play ball with whatever policies I put in place, and the policies were very, very lenient. I ask for access to the data in several layers. For example, I first ask for access to the database itself. If I can get access to the database, then I ask for exports. If I can get exports, then I ask for FTP sites. So the engine was created to be able to get government data no matter how they gave it to me. So I have best case scenarios where I have a replication of the database on site on the Office of Management and Budget. Those are the best case scenarios, because I can, of course, Libre also imports from SQLs, from SQL database. So I can actually do a single SQL statement towards my replication, my replica of the data. But sometimes I cannot get a replica of the data because the data set is too big, or they want to censor it on site before sending me the data, which is fine also. So instead of being very restrictive about how they were going to give the data, I was very lenient, and that was one of the big factors on getting the cooperation of the government agency. I was not imposing processes that would actually be too disruptive for the day-to-day IT works. So I actually just give me the data in whatever way you can. The software I just did is designed to be able to use the data in as many forms as possible. So just let the software do that. You just have to give me the data in any way you can. And instead of imposing, I came off as a helper in getting that data out of the government.
A liberator.
Yeah, that's why the software was named like that. It's a complete, it was completely on purpose. I just thought about the name and then figure out what the letters were going to mean. So it's a background name.
Yes, exactly. No, I'm very familiar with those. I tend to invent those a lot. I'm also looking at one of the reasons I suspect that the other organizations were very cooperative with you is you said that prior to this, they'd been spending their own money trying to implement these kinds of APIs. And here you come along with a solution that was sort of a general solution. One thing I'm curious about is how many organizations have you brought on so far? And have you had to make any fundamental architecture changes once you started talking to like the next one and the next one and the next one because abstraction was wrong?
No, the actual import process has worked very well for basically all data sets. The one thing they're asking now is data transformation during the import. For example, some fields have to be split. For example, daytime, they want split into date and time. They also want to merge fields and rename. Libre already has renamed field renaming capabilities and I'm about to go into the data transformation phase to add that capability. But major architectural changes have not occurred in a long time. So the shotgun approach has worked very good. One of the things that has moved government agencies to want to cooperate with this movement is that, as you said, they are spending a lot of their own budget, which actually is causing them a lot of problems, because you have to ask for a certain amount of money for technology. And if you overexpend that in one project, you might actually run out of money to do stuff like buying computers or buy professional service. So it is in their best interest to save as much money as possible liberating this data. Another problem they have is vendor lock-in. They have all this data in systems that they themselves can access because they don't have the technology to access their own data sometimes in the way they want. So Libre actually gives them more value because now they can reuse their data in that they couldn't access before, or can access it in a more modern way. For example, you cannot query a spreadsheet file. Mm-hmm. And a lot of government agencies, their database are spreadsheet files.
Yeah, so
let
sad.
That,
so
let that sink in. Yeah, let that sink in a little bit.
Yep.
Their database is our spreadsheet files. So when I go over them and I give them this software, then now they can query, they can filter, and they can render data where that was previously in spreadsheet files. There's basically no argument. There's basically no denial in corporation.
Wow. So I presume that some of these organizations that you're bringing on board already had some sort of maybe web API or maybe web services to provide some of this data. Do you envision that continuing to live on but live alongside what Libre is doing? Or do you eventually expect them all to just move over to the Libre API because of its universality?
That's policy making. But Libre also works as a API and web service proxy. So if these government agencies, for example, I have government agencies that have very little, their infrastructure is not suitable to handle traffic, massive traffic for developers, for example. So in those cases, Libre, I don't access the data from their servers. I access the data from their APIs, and because I store a version of their data set, now I can serve forward. I can serve as a proxy for their API, and they can shut down their public API and just use their API for government-to-government communication, and the official production copy of Libre can now serve forward all those API without the originating agency getting the bandwidth punch from the users.
Hmm. So that brings the next question, which is is Libre expected to be a project that also provides the clusters of systems that are required to actually host this data? Or are you expecting each of these agencies to also then set up their own server farm or whatever that is strictly for the Libre data?
Well, that's policy, but I didn't want the technological solution to force either one. So I created the software to be installed any way they want. The software right now, or the production installation, is hosted on the Office of Management and Budget just because they have a little bit better infrastructure. I plan to have a high availability infrastructure with several copies of Libre. But if the government agency individually wants to host its own copy of Libre, there's also Docker images and VirtualBox images that they can plug in, turn on, and they can start serving their data themselves if they want to do that, or if there's a special law or a mandate that forbids them to export their data. So for the technological part, it can go both ways. I'm just waiting for the policy to land then.
Interesting. I also have to ask, since we had you on for my own EDMS back 7 or 8 months ago, is this related to that at all? Did this come out of that project, or they just happen to be similar, solving similar spaces?
No, from the software side, they don't share any code. For example, Because Mayan is copyrighted to me, and I wanted this software to be copyrighted to the Office of Management and Budget, to the CIO, so I couldn't port any kind of data. So this is a completely from scratch project.
But clearly the import modules probably could share some of the code, right?
Mayan, for example, imports files by just copying them. It does no introspection into the formats, because Mayan is a document management system used in legal settings, so that original document cannot be touched or changed at all. So Mayan just copies the file and internally just handles the previews, the image representation of the documents is the only thing it changes. Unlike Libre, which needs to import and modify the data, because Libre works as a DNS. The bulk of the processing is done on the import, so that the serving of the data is as lightweight as possible. So it's a write one, read many kind of system. So I wanted the read to be as lightweight as possible, so all the conversion of fields and data types is done on the import. Mayan, on the other side, reads one and exports many times, but only modifies the physical, the image representation of documents, does nothing to touch the original files at all, to keep the continuity of it's intact.
Okay, so sort of in, along that side. So since Libre is actually doing introspection, looking at the actual data, do you have something the equivalent of a schema that you can define for a particular data set to make sure that the data that's coming in or trying to be imported isn't, you know, doesn't have extraneous fields or doesn't have some integrity issues?
Yes, in the web interface, you define what the fields are supposed to be, what data types are they're going to interpret it, to be interpreted as. It also has a blind importer where you can just import the data and serve it as is. But it has several levels of introspection. So you can go either way, just import the data and serve it as is, as a dictionary of key values with no conversion of fields, or you can try to interpret the fields as date, as strings, as numbers, as geometries in case of spatial files. So you can do any one of those.
So now I've been looking through some of the details while you've been talking with Randall. I see you have your own query language, LQL query language. Why did you create a new query language? Is SQL not good enough for you?
Well, the problem with SQL is that it only works with prepared data, with when you separate the data into tables. Most of this data is flat. Another problem with SQL, which stands for standard query language, is that SQL is not anywhere near standard. Every database re-implements SQL in its own special way. For example, in Oracle, if you want to do date queries, you have to first do a typecasting of the date. And in another SQL languages, you handle dates as strings. So I'm getting data from spreadsheets, which have no query language. I have data from spatial files, which can be reinterpreted as JSON file, GeoJSON files. I have data from different kind of databases, Oracle, Microsoft, MySQL, MariaDB. And using SQL would not be a solution that would fit all the problems. So I had to create a unified query language so that you can query any kind of data set regardless of its original format.
Right. So what has it got that isn't in SQL, for example? Can you give us some examples of the differences?
Well, it handles date queries exactly the same, no matter where the original data set, the original format of the data set. That's one of the problems it fixes. It also has spatial query capabilities that, for example, PostgreSQL has an extension called PostGIS that you can do spatial queries. But depending on the underlying version of Postgres, you have certain capabilities, certain type of filtering for geometries that you can do. MySQL can also do a limited set of spatial filtering, but the capabilities of those two databases are completely different. I needed to have a query language that will have an all-encompassing filtering of geometries no matter the underlying database that Libre is using. So in this sense, Libre works as a abstraction engine to the data and to the database. So no matter how you choose to store the data in Libre, whether it is SQLite, MySQL, Postgres, Microsoft, you will have the same filtering and geospatial filtering capabilities no matter what backend you were running Libre on. So that was the challenge. That was the purpose of creating a unified query language that's interpreted by the application and not being passed to the database manager, because otherwise I would be dependent on the capabilities of the underlying database manager.
So in the middle of that, you casually said there's a GIS tool in there as well. So I've got a list here. So far I see that you're a REST proxy, you're a load balancer, you've got a universal query language, you've got a data reformatter, you're a GIS tool. Is there anything you haven't mentioned in there?
I would have to say that one of the things I want to do is data sensoring, which is one of the things that are in the roadmap, but have not been yet implemented. For example, take the same API, and depending on the user, sensors set certain fields. For example, Libre can already export the same data into two different API endpoints. And it can do access control, so I can give certain users access to this endpoint and not to this one. But I want to do that more fine-grained. I want to go down into the data itself, and I can give users of this group access to all the fields of this API endpoint. But users who are not authenticated can only see certain fields of the same API engine. That's one of the features I would like to see implemented soon, because right. It will allow the same API endpoint to be reused by, for example, by government agencies, employees, and the general public without having to export it more than once.
Right.
So now I noticed you're using GPLv3 for the software. Was there a particular reason for using GPLv3 rather than, for example, the Apache license?
Well, it was a very hurried decision. I'm open for everybody to chime in with the comments how the software should be re-licensed. If it has to be relicensed, you have to take into consideration that the government of Puerto Rico has never developed open source. It basically is afraid of open source or free software. It has never used software. In 1 year, we managed to create an open data policy, create a GitHub account, and start developing open source software as an official policy of the government. The amount of time I had to consider what license I was going to develop Libre on took about an hour. So it was a very decision of out of the spur of the moment. So I went with the safest bet I could get, which was GPL3, because GPL version 3 actually protects the software even from its own author. So I wanted to protect this investment of time on S4 as much as possible. Remember, I was at the time I did this, I was a government employee. So I wanted to protect the source code, the project, even from the government itself.
Well, that's an admirable goal. And just listening to the list of different moving parts of this thing that Simon listed a moment ago, sounds like a really ambitious project. There's a lot of moving parts. There's a lot of parts that all have to play together. There's a lot of parts that have to interface with many other systems in terms of like the imports and the layout engines and the GIS data and stuff like that. Is it possible this will never get done in a sense that it's complete because there's just too many parts and not enough people working on it?
Well, more than the technical goals of the software, I wanted to motivate people to show that this was possible. If just one developer can get this kind of software off the ground in a record time, the first version of Libre just took 1 month. Mm. If one developer can do this, I just wanted to raise the bar of what the people are used to expect from the government. That was my goal. Mm-hmm. Now that people know they can expect more from the government, they can expect quality software such as this one. So my goal is that now all the people can see this, get motivated by it, see that it's open source free software and just jump on it. Yes, it is very complicated, but I'm very open to any question any people ask. Before I quit my job, I was actually creating diagrams of how all the pieces work together. Mm-hmm. Libre is very uses a lot of abstraction. I wanted to be able to reuse the code as much as possible. So you're gonna see very loose coupling between the parts. You can change the data store code without basically affecting the rest of the engine. You can add or change the export drivers without affecting the import drivers. So even though it is very complicated, it is very loosely coupled. It follows a lot of things that make software like Java very popular in enterprise because you get a lot of use, a value of the code. So I wanted to move that over there. For example, for exactly that reason, the software is complex and I want its complexity to not be its own downfall. So a lot of stuff is very loosely coupled. So mm-hmm. if you're a developer that you know you're a developer slash designer, you can just jump in and work in the CMS part of the code. If you're a sysadmin that also knows a little bit of software development, you can jump in and just work on the import drivers. So I abstracted all the parts as much as possible, so you don't need to understand the whole project to start just jump working on it.
Now, does that mean you're looking for people to work alongside you, or are you talking about these people like they're just in their own organizations being able to adapt the stuff that you're cranking out?
Well, initially I was, as a government employee, as the director of software development for the government of Puerto Rico, I wanted people to help me with the software because I'm not in that position anymore. I just quit my job a few weeks back. Now, my goal is for them to fork the project, to add their own capabilities, to customize it as they want for the specific needs. And I will take my fork and I will pull back all these patches and try to maintain my own version of Libre. It is the first of its kind. So anything that comes out of this is already a win.
And I just have to ask. Yes. You said that you did this first release all in a month. First off, how many cups of coffee did you drink? And second, how many sunrises did you see?
I'm blessed with having a great life partner. My girlfriend is very understanding. She knows this is my job. She knows this is my passion. And she's very, I have to give all the credit to her for that. So, yes, I've seen a lot of sunrises. But and if you look at the commits for mine, you're going to see that I'm a night owl. That's where most developers work. Mm-hmm. And you will see commits with 500 lines of code, 1,000 lines of code. I tend to be very prolific at night. So one of the things I talk about the software, the CIO, was not only develop this software, my goal was to teach the government how to treat software developers. Mm. You can the software development is 50% technical, 50% creativity, and you cannot force an artist to draw something, to draw a painting from 8 to 5, in an 8 to 5 job. So there's a certain degree of inspiration. You're not an Android. You don't have a switch in the back that says create, go to sleep. So one of the things I also wanted to do with this project was teach the government, look, this is software development. It's something that doesn't behave. It's a professional that does not behave like anything you have seen before. So getting dynamic work, how would I say this? Instead of going to work from 8 to 5, one of the things I tried to do was teach the government that software developers sometimes work at night. Mm-hmm. And I started to create a procedure, a policy for software developers so that software developers could work at the times they're more productive and have that time become validated. So in essence, I was also trying to set the groundwork for home for teleworking on the government, which is something completely taboo for the government. Mm. But it's something that as a software development, you have to do. Sometimes your best ideas come at 2 a.m. and you have to just get out of bed and start coding before they just turn into dust, into a puff of smoke at 8 o'clock. So one of the things was also teach the government, look, software development is not an 8 to 5 job. If you want 8 to 5 software developers, this is not going to work. So getting the culture of software development, of free software, of open source software development, and use this software as an example of how far you can go if you give the software developers what they need was and also a primary goal of the project.
Wow, so much motivation for you. That's just amazing. We're almost out of time, but I also then have to ask about motives. Is this going to be a labor of love for you, or are you going to fund this somehow? I mean, you're out of a job now, so I presume the income's not coming in like it used to.
Well, the good thing is that stuff like this won me a lot of community points. So job offers is something I don't have I don't have an excess. I don't have. I have more than enough job offers and contracts offers. So the good thing is the software spoke by itself. This is not the only software I developed in the year I was in the government as director of software development. So in that sense, the message got through. Now, Libre can go either way. One of the things I'm trying to do now is to have government agencies and private sector sponsor the project. If they don't want to sponsor it, and trying to create a private version of the software and sell licenses if that's what they want. Mm-hmm. Because I cannot relicense the software because I don't have the copyright. I gave the copyright on purpose to the government. I will have to create a special agreement with the government so that the government can sell licenses of the software. Because the government giving everything for free is a model that is no longer self-sufficient. We're starting to see more and more government agencies billing for services. So billing access to the data was another goal I had on the software. I can set up the software so that developers can have 1,000 API calls to a specific API. But if you want 10,000 API accesses to the software, you pay a small fee to a specific government agency and you do a payback to the government agency, which is I'm hoping would be a lot cheaper than going to private. So monetization of access to the data for privileged access to the data was another thing that was considered as part of the software.
Mm-hmm. So we're almost out of time, like I said. Is there anything we haven't covered that you want to make sure our audience is aware of?
Well, that they can use this software everywhere. This software was created for the government of Puerto Rico, but any government can use it. They can reduce their expenditure on liberation of data. They can create a new market where consultants, such as now myself, can install this software as a service, in the cloud, for example, or they can sell their expertise as open data consultants. With this tool, they don't have to spend money on software or develop the software themselves, and they can pass on these savings to the government. So this software also creates a job opportunity for software consultants. It's a major, open data is a major economic engine, even for game development. I had game developers ask me for roadmaps of Puerto Rico so that I can create racing games using actual roads of Puerto Rico. So I think that the end message we'll have to say is don't worry about how people are going to use the data. Just get this software, liberate the data, and they will surprise you with the things that they're going to be able to create with that data.
Sounds amazing. That's just it's been very inspirational hearing you talk about this and your goals and how it's much more than just cranking out some more software. I think I asked you both of these questions last time, but for people that didn't listen to the previous show, what's your favorite scripting language?
Python, all the way.
Yes, of course. Because I'm now Leroy are all written in Python, I presume, right? Because you have Django and stuff in there. So.
Yeah, I know Sam has been a champion of Java, and I apologize to him, but...
That's all right. You go right ahead.
And I know that you're a Perl monk, and actually I use one of your algorithms for Libre. I use the Schwarzian transformation. I actually used one of your algorithms. I did a Python implementation of the Schwarzian transformation. Why Python? Because Python is a completely open source. It's a modern software. If we want to promote openness, the openness has to be in all layers: data, software, and licensing. I cannot mm-hmm. promote open data with private software. I think it's an oxymoron. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And what was your favorite text editor?
I'm going to get lynched by Vim. V-I-M.
Them again. All right. Well, you know, there's just so many marks in that column now. My scoreboard is completely falling over sideways. But it's okay. Use what works for you. That's what I'll tell everybody. Use what works for you. I happen to be very fluent in Perl and Emacs, and that's what I use because it gets my job done faster. And if Python and Vim works for you, that's great. That's a great thing about open source software. Well, Roberto, it's been really wonderful having you back to talk about this project. I'm very inspired by some of the things you were talking about in the show. And I hope that this also serves as a call for action for people to step up to the plate, as you've just been talking about for the last few minutes, of helping you out in all sorts of different ways. I'm sure that, you know, given that it's a web project, there's all sorts of people, designers and database people and people managing imports, exports, that sort of thing. So really glad to have you back on. Thanks for coming on the show.
It was my pleasure. And thanks a lot for the opportunity to get this kind of software out so that people know all the things that Floss can do. It's not just be more inexpensive. It's all about freedom. All the freedom you get, not only from the software, but from all the data, all the capabilities, all the freedoms you get with the openness of the development of the software itself.
Great. And the next time I get down to Puerto Rico on one of my cruises, I'll have to give you advance notice. Maybe we can get together in person.
Yes, I would love that. Please.
Very good. Very good. That was Roberto Rosario talking to us from Puerto Rico about his new latest project, which has so much ambition and goals. Wow. What do you think, Simon?
Well, you know, it's much more than I guessed it was at the beginning of the show. You know, I've got a list here. It's a REST proxy. It's a load balancer. It's got built into it a universal query language that normalizes queries across databases, spreadsheets, and other data sources. It's got a built-in GIS tool. It does data reformatting by scripts, and he's going to be adding fairly soon role-managed data access. That's a pretty ambitious tool. It's kind of the superset of all the tools that I ever wrote back in the days when I was a programmer writing migration software, and I think it's very interesting indeed. I'm going to be going back to the MariaDB community and pointing it out to them. It looks like a great migration tool for them to be using. So I think it's very promising, very interesting. What do you think, Randall? You've probably written lots of software that does this stuff in the past. What do you think of it?
I've written a lot of ad hoc stuff, probably the same way that you're talking about. You know, somebody needs some glue somewhere. So, of course, Perl being my language choice for that, and needing some sort of import interface or needing some sort of, database queries or specialized things like that. But to have it all sort of in one package that is known to play well together, this is that's definitely an accomplishment. It's ambitious. Everything I heard was just tons and tons of ambition. And I hope that he finds a way to fund the rest of the project as development continues on that. And I'm sure he will. Given the number of people there. Actually, a couple of things in the chat room, people were talking about, well, this is confusing. Is it not LibreOffice? So yeah. The choice of name, I think, is probably the only thing I'm questioning here because Libre is in everything that is in free software. So,
he's only in English, he's only one degree away from a great name. It could be a data liberator. He could call it his data liberator. It's doing some very useful things there, providing a web proxy that means that data owners don't have to be responsible for providing an open API. That's a really useful function to provide. And especially as an open data tool, I could see this being very popular indeed in a lot of places.
And especially since it removes the Tower of Babel thing. I mean, if you know how to talk to this when it's installed over here, then you can talk to it over here using roughly the same tools. You know, we don't need to have tens or dozens of libraries that that are written in each of the languages to kind of unify that and try to hide that behind the scenes. Like we've had this Tower of Babel, say, in the virtualization software and other sorts of things in this area. So this is going to be good. I wish the best for Roberto, and I hope to meet him someday. So any further words on that before we get moving on?
No, I look forward to your report of what the Puerto Rican rum is like that evening.
Oh, wow, if I remember.
If you remember.
It's the biggest problem with going into the old town there. There's too many things to make you forget the next day. Yes, exactly. Anyway, so coming up, we have some guests that are already booked. We've got Genevieve, which is open source software. So we're getting more and more of these in-dash smart systems with lots of soft buttons and things like that. So these guys hope to create sort of an open source platform for all of that, maybe making it so there's universal plugins and stuff that you can add to your car to make it customized strictly for you. We're also covering Go shortly after that. That's a board that has white and black stones. No, not that one. Go, the language from Google, been around for a few years. being used a lot for server-side applications and command line stuff. Even using it here at my client ZipRecruiter in a couple of locations, I believe. KOROS, which is, or KOROS, I don't know how it's pronounced, is Linux for massive server deployments. So if you have massive servers, I guess, if they have they bend light because water, or, you know, light, they're so massive. No, I don't know. For many, many servers, I guess what they mean there. On the short list for getting a date, although we haven't got dates for the next three, Nginx, as I mentioned last week, I've been waiting for them for years to come onto the show, and they are excited to be on, but they aren't. They don't haven't picked a date yet. Just sent me an email yesterday. I'm really excited about this one too. GNU Health, which actually won an award last year, I think, for biggest social motivation of a project. Richard Stallman actually presented them the award. But basically, this is a total information system for hospitals. And in fact, Jamaica just came on board. They're actually all across the government of Jamaica. All the government-run hospitals are actually deploying this GNU Health software to save costs and get rid of a proprietary software for that and exchange more information and so on. Maybe some of those will have some Libre APIs on. That'd be kind of fun. And also somebody who sent me email, and thanks, by the way, guys, for this. You guys talking to these project leaders actually has them come to me, so it solves my problem quite well, is Omega. It's a space simulation framework. So that's supposed to be a somewhat visual show. They've actually got a laboratory where they can show it, but it simulates like planet motions and systems of stars and like ships and how fast they can turn and things like that. So you can basically build a massive online game from it, or just do real simulations. You could actually like simulate the Earth and Mars and figure out how to fly from one to the other in a simulation system. So that's coming up soon as well. So Simon just whispered in my ear, DIY universe. That's pretty cool. Build your own universe. But and a lot of others on the short list, twit.tv/floss is our homepage. From there, you'll find a link to my spreadsheet of upcoming shows, including open slots, which is where I send the guests to go find their own time frame. And also, there's a lot of other projects on the short list that I'm still sending email out to, trying to fill up the rest of Q1, and then I'll open up Q2, and we'll just do that over and over again. That's how we get all the shows on here. And as I just mentioned, if you want somebody on the show, just email the project leader, have them email me, merlin@stonehenge.com, and I will get them slotted as quickly as I can. You can follow us on Floss Weekly on Google Plus. I try to announce guests as they get booked, and also I do a 1 hour in advance announcement to make sure that people know what's going on. We're also Floss Weekly on Twitter. We have a live chat. We took a couple questions from that today at live.twit.tv when we're taping. We're typically taping 8:30 a.m. Pacific time on Wednesdays, the earliest show on the Twit Network. That's right. I have the privilege of being the earliest show on the Twit Network. You can also follow me at Merlin on Twitter, but more likely I'm posting as Randall L. Schwartz on Google+. I post about 3 or 4 things a day there. And I am still scheduling a visit on the new Linux Voice podcast. Ben Everhart asked me to promote his show, and I said, well, only if I get to be on it. So we're still trying to set the date on that. I will be both speaking at SoCal Linux Expo, Scale. We talked a lot about that last week. And I'm also representing Floss Weekly there. I'm going to be doing some interviews and going to be looking for future guests there as well. Enough plugging for me. Simon, what do you want to plug today?
I would love everyone to come take a look at my website. That's webmink.com, W-B-M-I-N-K. And you'll find in most places I use the handle Webmink to represent myself. I'm Simon Phipps on Google+, Webmink on Twitter. I'm going to be at FOSDEM. That's the Free and Open Source Developers European Meeting. That's coming up the first weekend in February 1st and 2nd. And I would love to see you there. If you're going to be there, send me a message beforehand, because it's impossible to find people otherwise at FOSDEM. So give me a call through my website at webmink.com on the About page or on Google+. I also write for InfoWorld every Friday, and I would love you to read my column and leave comments, and particularly to click on all the social media buttons so my editor knows that you like it. And I've just started up again on Computer World UK. I'll be posting a column this evening, I hope. That's Wednesday. And every Wednesday on open source, digital rights, and related issues. That's about it from me, Randall. Back to you.
Very good, Simon. And it's nice been virtually chatting. I'm actually chatting with you. It's nice being virtually with you, but not really with you. That's why I said virtual. That's right. The caffeine must be draining down out of the tea here. So I guess it's about time to wrap up. So we'll see you all again next week on Floss Weekly.